you are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we're not going to do a quick intro this week because instead we're going to play America's Most Hardcore by DFL. We'll be right back.
We're dead fucking last. I'm Crazy Tom, Crazy Marnie, Crazy Adam, and Fucked Up Tony! Fuck you.
America's Most Hardcore by DFL. You say, John, why are we playing DFL? That record came out, like, let's see, 20 years ago or so? Why are you playing that, John? That's an old record. Because it's being re-released by Trust Records. Who's Trust Records? That's the label that re-released Circle Jerks' best albums and 7 Seconds and some SSD stuff and some YouTube grade stuff and a whole bunch of iconic stuff. And now they're releasing something from the 90s, a classic 90s hardcore record, DFL, which of course is Crazy Tom Davis, the skateboarder, Monty Messick, first wave punk rocker, and Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys on bass. And it is the punk band they formed after Monty and Ad Rock were hanging out and decided to make a punk band. And that is what DFL My Crazy Life is. And the reissue is super duper uper sweet because A, the A-side, which is the original album, is remastered by Mario Caldado. Of course, who's Mario Caldado? The Beastie Boys producer and mixer, who also produced and mixed the original version of DFL. We came back and remastered the new version. Also, on the B-side is a full, completely unreleased live show recorded at G-Sun Studios, the famous Beastie Boys studio, at a party that was recorded the day after the album was recorded at a huge Beastie Boys party. And it comes with an embossed cover, and it comes with a zine done by Brian Ray Turcock, and it comes with a 10,000-word oral history written by who? By yours truly, me. And I interviewed all the members of the band. I interviewed some actors and actresses in the world and some other punk rock people. I talked to Ione Sky. I talked to Max Perlick, the actor. I talked to Jim and Fletcher of Pennywise. I talked to members of Sick of It All. I talked to members of Blink-182. How does it all tie together? I talked to Greg Hetson of the Circle Jerks. How does it all tie together? You'll have to buy the record and read the oral history to find out. But you will see that with DFL, there are connections all the way from Black Flag through Pennywise, through the Red Hot Chili Peppers, through the Beastie Boys, through Sick of It All, through Keanu Reeves, through Guns N' Roses, and it all ties together through DFL. And this package is super rad. We've been working on this a long time, and it came out super nice, and I'm super psyched, and it's going to be awesome. And there hopefully and likely will be a record release show. Where? Sam, where do you think the record release show is going to be?
Philadelphia. Not
wrong. Compton, California. In Compton, in a backyard. So we'll see how that goes. So anyways, it's out via Trust Records. You can just go to the Trust Records website and buy it from there. And it's pretty rad. So, yeah.
Well, that's great, John. It seems like you're very, very busy.
I am busy. And as we were saying before we start recording, I'm stretched too thin. I got to chop some stuff out. But I am super psyched on this. DFL is such a rad band. And it's so great they're kind of getting the deluxe treatment, which they totally deserve. And I think this is really going to elevate the band and really bring some really super cool music to people that maybe don't know a whole lot about DFL. So this is Pizza Man, Pizza Man, Pizza Man. He delivers by DFL off My Crazy Life, the reissue out via Trust Records. And then we'll come back and we'll do the news. Pizza Man, Pizza Man, Pizza Man. He delivers.
All right, this is for Max Berlick, Pizza Man.
Sam, and that was my infomercial for the Trust Records re-release of My Crazy Life by DFL. And let me tell you, people, it really is super duper cool. Also, here's another punk news thing, and then we'll actually start to show it proper. we have a lot going on at punk news, which is, I always feel like it's like 2011 or 2010 or 2009. Sam, remember when we would do all these wacky hijinks, like get Mikey Erg elected in, against me, or like fight with Ben Weasel, or like what were some of the other wacky hijinks that we did?
There was too many to even recall. There's also some that got us in trouble. So too many hijinks.
we don't need to name names, but Sam, do you remember when a former editor who was a nice guy and was a really reserved and really wasn't like a crazy guy or anything did a April Fool's article? And I don't know about you, but I was like, maybe you don't want to run that. And he's like, no, it's going to be totally fine. And it totally became a massive dumpster fire. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes.
So weird. I still don't know what was going on in his mind. Like, he wasn't like a combative or crazy guy, but he just had that article that just totally exploded. And then I'm going to name names here because I don't care. Britt Reiser's like, I'm in PR. I'm going to take care of this. And then she issued a statement and it made it 50 times worse. And she's like, I'm out of here.
Oh, God.
I think that thanks. Thanks a lot.
Well, let's not talk about this any further because I feel like this is going to have like hate mail coming in to us. Since, you know, we don't need that right now. We're trying not to hate. Really cool things happening, right?
We actually, like, really, like maybe we are getting back into the wack. I mean, honestly, we can't really do the wacky stuff anymore just because people aren't into fun anymore. And they're really not into fun on the internet. And we just can't do wacky stuff anymore because it'll just be hate. Like if we did the Mikey Erg thing now, people would, like, hate it. You know, it's kind of a bummer that works. However, we are doing a lot. Honestly, we're doing more cool stuff than like any other punk website and more than any other music website because all the other music websites are corporate pretty much. And so we're doing lots of rad stuff. Here's another rad thing we're doing. Go Jack Tack and the Dead Milkmen, who I just saw with the Dead Milkmen last Friday at a massive cemetery in Philadelphia. It's called, Laurel Hill Cemetery, which is a massive, massive cemetery. The Dead Milkmen, like, for an annual show there, more or less, and they did the record release show there, and they were just so awesome. I mean, they played a lot of new tracks. There's just the Dead Milkmen really don't. I mean, they get credit, but they don't get enough credit. Dead Milkmen are amazing, amazing band. Anyways, Joe, Jack, Todd, and Dead Milkmen, and Mike Yerg are co-headlining a show at Revilla Grooves Records in north of Princeton, New Jersey, Milltown, New Jersey, which is just north of Princeton, about 10, 15 minutes north of Princeton, kind of near Princeton Record Exchange. Revilla Grooves is a real cool shop I've been to many times. And kind of like my Creep Record shows, they want to start doing shows up at Revilla Grooves. So the first one that we're going to do is Joe Jack Talcum and Mikey Erg. That is August 26th in Milltown at Revilla Grooves. It's a matinee 2 to 4 or 5 p.m. And Sam, what do you think the cost is?
Hopefully it's free because no one got money these days.
Free. Free show. So you can come on and see Joe Jack Calcum of the Dead Milkmen for free and Mikey Erg of the Ergs for free. And Rusty Pigeon is opening with members of Riverside Odds and Plow United. I mean, they were even giving me hate for this in the comment section, Sam. I don't know how you can hate on a free Joe Jack Calcum show. I really don't.
Well, they're just going to hate to hate. You know that, John.
I know. It honestly makes me feel good. It really does. Because, like, this is, you can't argue with this in any context. It's a free show with Joe Jack Calcum and Mikey Erg in a record store. You can't criticize any of that. And the fact that they were, I mean, just makes it more evident about it's just losers in basements, you know? And we're just kicking ass, Sam. We're kicking ass. I mean, look at this, Sam. We're throwing shows. We're doing record shows. We're contributing to reissues and stuff like that. Plus, we're running a really rad website with a whole bunch of cool articles. I mean, really, Sam. And we're totally non-corporate in that, like, we don't answer to anybody. I mean, we don't even really know who owns the. I mean, Alvin owns the website, but he's never around. So, you know, so
we just manage ourselves these days.
Sam, who's more punk than us? Who's more punk than us, Sam? Who?
I don't know. Maybe my dog.
maybe your dog, but I mean, man, I feel real good about punk news these days, Sam. I mean, of course, there are things we can improve on. We definitely can improve on reviews and interviews, but you know, we got some cool interviews going up. But I mean, if you look at the totality, Sam, we're doing 10 to 15 to 20 articles a day. We're still doing reviews. We're still doing interviews. We're throwing shows. We're throwing record shows. We do a podcast every week. Man.
Wait, I would have to say that the graphic on this one article is so good that, like, I can't even tell the Joe Jack Talcum and Mikey Erk show. Like, I can't even tell that their heads are, like, super, super cut out.
That is the cover of Hall & Oates' Voices album, and I made it Mikey Erg and Joe Jack Talcum to be funny. I was trying to, like, who are some famous musical duos, and I couldn't come up with, like, any covers that really worked. Well, actually, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to call Clash of the Titans, but I couldn't find, like, an image of, like, Zeus and, like, Hercules or whatever, like, fighting. And the one that I did, like, it just didn't work out, so I said, fine, I'll do famous musical duos. And really, this Hall & Oates album cover was the only one that I could work with Photoshop-wise. And so, but I think it came out pretty sharp, honestly, thanks to Hall & Oates.
Yes, it looks great. Good job.
Thank you. So anyways, that's August 26th in Milltown, New Jersey at 2 p.m. at Revilla Grooves. So now let's hit the news proper. And the news proper today. Oh, Sammy B, tell me about With Honor.
Oh my God, you guys, I am so, so freaking excited about this. So Connecticut hardcore band With Honor, they're like one of my favorite things ever. They literally just released a new single called My Anchor and literally just announced that they're releasing an album sometime soon in the fall, I think. It's called Boundless. I'm so, so, so happy about this because I have loved them for a really long time and really, really want them to come back because, you know, I need a little hardcore in my life. I can't be emo all the time. So My Anchor, I already listened to it, like, let's say 7 times today. I think it is a perfect encapsulation of With Honor. And if some people don't know, After With Honor broke up or disbanded or whatever happened to them, some of them formed a band called Ambition, and which is one of my husband's favorite bands. So I would have to say No Anchor is a very, very great encapsulation of both bands and their sounds. So I'm super stoked about this. They are playing some shows here and there because I guess they're adults and have stuff to do. So I'm Yeah, I'm just so happy. John, did you take a listen?
I did. I think you can definitely hear the emo influence in here. This is definitely hardcore on the side of like hardcore becoming emo or post rock or that kind of thing, as opposed to tough guy hardcore or hardcore punk. And so I mean, so Sam, like, this band has been around for a while.
Yeah, they've been. I think they started in the 2000s, somewhere around there. This new album is going to be their third album. So they have two other albums, whatchamacallit, Heart Means Everything came out in 2004. And then This Is Our Revenge came out in 2005. So, yeah.
I see they were on Victory Records. I wonder how that worked out for them.
Yeah. Well, this one's coming out on Pure Noise, so hopefully this is going to be great. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, speaking of things that may or may not be great, Ozzy Osbourne has pulled out of Power Trip. He released a of course, Power Trip is the festival. It's one of these Golden Voice, I quote, mega festivals or whatever, where it's like just like not that many bands and it's super expensive, but it's like all headliners. So this time, the first time, Power Trip is Guns N' Roses, Iron Maiden, AC/DC. It was supposed to be Ozzy Osbourne, as well as Metallica and Tool. Tickets start at $600 and run to more than $1,700. I think if you really want to spend big, you can spend in the thousands and thousands for one concert, which is crazy, really. So anyway, Ozzy pulled out. Ozzy said, as painful as this is, I've had to make the decision to bow out of performing on Power Trip in October. My original plan was to return to the stage in the summer of 2024, and when the offer to do the show came in, I optimistically moved forward. Unfortunately, my body's telling me I'm just not ready yet, and I'm too proud to have the first show that I do in nearly 5 years be half-assed. The band that will be replacing me on Power Trip will be announced shortly. They are personal friends of mine, and I can promise that you will not be disappointed. Above all, I want to thank my fans, my band, my crew for their unconditional loyalty and continued support. I love you all, and I will see you soon. God bless Ozzy. Fun fact, actually, the original band approach was supposed to be Black Sabbath doing yet another reunion. But then I think Tony Iommi thought Ozzy. No, that's right. Ozzy floated it past Tony Iommi. And Tony Iommi was like, it's like, well, I'm not sure that you're up to it, Ozzy. And Ozzy's like, you're right. And then Ozzy booked it himself in classic Ozzy style. And then he pulled out. The band replacing Ozzy is Judas Priest, which I don't think you can really argue with that replacement. I mean, if I could only see Ozzy or only see Judas Priest, I'd pick Judas Priest every day of the week. Well, actually, that's not true. I mean, I would see Judas Priest like three times and then Ozzy one time, but you get what I'm saying. So anyways, a lot of interesting things to unpack here. And A, Golden Voice and these giant corporate festivals are doing more and more of these premium events that are specifically designed to extract as much money out of your wallet as they possibly can. And they're very scientific about it and are impressively, which is what I'm looking for, impressively tailored to do just that. Another thing is, I find it bizarre that they call this Power Trip, being that there was a notable heavy metal band called Power Trip that only broke up after the singer died. If I was Power Trip, the band, man, I really wish they'd register the trademark and they could totally sue Golden Voice over this. It's kind of lame on Golden Voice. The other thing is, Sam, what do you think of Judas Priest replacing Ozzy? On top of that, what's your opinion of these mega festivals that cost a ton of money? And lastly, everyone's like, oh, I feel so bad for Ozzy. It's like, oh, I hope he gets... It's like, why are you feeling bad for Ozzy? like Ozzy's, like, he's had, like, literally, like, five final tours. And he's saying, oh, this is the last one, and they comes back like a year later just to get more money out of people. And he's kind of an all-around jerk. You know, the way they drummed Bill Ward out of Black Sabbath, the way they sued Tony Iommi for the Black Sabbath trademark when Tony Iommi had cancer. I'm not saying he's not a great artist and a great singer, but why are we seeing him as a character that deserves sympathy as opposed to an extremely manipulative and money-hungry artist that really just trying to get money out of as much people as possible? Not that I think artists shouldn't make money, but I think there's a way to do it that's kind of classy and has some style. There's just a way to just be kind of a pick about it. I don't know. What's your stance on all this, Sam?
So this is not Sam's jam, you would, I guess, surmise. But I would have to say that spending $600 on a mega festival like this, I guess makes sense in a way, only because you would, like, most huge bands, because a lot of these bands are, like, huge in the worlds that they live in, you know, like Iron Maiden and Metallica, they're like huge bands in that circle. I think even like Metallica, like, I think they're coming around soon. And I think I saw that their tickets were like $300, you know, just like normal Crazy. Tickets. Exactly. Crazy. So it's kind of like, okay, if you're into this, right, into the sound, like, then $600 isn't bad because you're going to be checking off all of these bands at one shot instead of like spending a la carte $300 here, $300 there, like, you know, things like that. So I kind of get why it's that expensive. And, you know, me, I hate spending so much money. But I guess the other thing is, like, I just dropped a lot of money for comedy festival tickets recently. I was like, you know, you kind of have to think about, like, how much of the $600 is going towards fees, you know? Because if the $600 is going towards the bands, then sure. But if this $600, like, let's say $100 of it is all, like, you know, charges and fees, then it's like, what the heck, you know? Plus, like, when I was, like, looking into this thing, I'm like, oh, God, it's, like, one of these other festivals where you're, like, camping out, potentially. Like, there was a camping package. So I'm like, is this, like, weird Coachella, just not Coachella music? You know? Yeah, I do hope that whoever does spend the over $1,000 for this, these bands play for 2 hours straight because it's two bands each night, I guess, right? So you're getting your money's worth and they're not just like playing for like 30 minutes and then peacing out, you know? So there's that. Ozzy, you know, he's really old. I did catch a couple of episodes of when him and his family had a television show. And I do understand he is out of his mind. And I kind of can't understand a word he says sometimes. But, you know, I do understand him being optimistic and, you know, confirming that he would be here for this. Like, way back when, because a lot of times when you're dealing with festivals, you're booking things months in advance. And, you know, I guess COVID has shown us, you know, at any time, you could get sick and just, like, not play a show. So he's, I guess, still not well. I don't feel anything about it, you know, like, either way, because yes, he probably has had like 50 million goodbye tours. And I think I did read something that, like, he said, like, you know, he'll do things like this, like, moving forward. Like, you know, opportunities, I guess he can't turn down. But I would have to say, like, if he did get on stage and you're spending $600 on, like, to go see him or part of him or part of the day is him, then, and it was fast, I would not be happy about that. So I would think that him dropping off and getting Judas Priest or whatever is probably better than seeing a half-ass Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah. I don't know. I don't ever, I feel like this is a lot. Like, I feel like there's just a lot of festivals popping up for no apparent reason.
Well, or maybe the reason is to make tons and tons and tons and tons of money, you know.
Yeah, well, the money thing, yeah, sure, but it's like, really? You know? I'm not even sure if my aging body could deal with something like this. Like, it was a lot just sitting through watching The Cure play for like 2-3 hours. And I'm inside. I'm not outside. Nor, and I was going home afterwards. I'm not camping. Yeah, so I don't know.
You know, all these acts are headliners. So I've never seen like two massive headliners play headlining sets right in a row. Like, what would it be like to see Guns N' Roses and then Iron Maiden? Like two full headlining sets by two massive bands. I mean, that's weird. Yeah, that's weird. I wonder if it's too much. Like, is that twice as awesome, or is it only like half as awesome? Because it's like you only have so much dopamine in your system. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess if you're the type of person that only goes to concerts every now and then, this might be the thing for you. Not like someone like me that goes to concerts all the time or like shows all the time. You know, because I do distinguish like the difference between going to a show and going to a concert. This is more a concert type of, you know, space type of thing. And, you know, this is like double good if like Guns N' Roses and Iron Maiden is your favorite band, you know, like I get it. But it's also like, you know, I guess a weekend and a lot of people, like, you know, we have fest goers that goes to fests for the entire weekend and they're stoked on life an entire weekend. Like, every time I've gone to fest, I came back sick because it was like exhausting, you know, your body does take a toll. So this might be worth it to someone, maybe not me or you. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just tired of the whole like Disney World thing where like every single step you got to pay for this, you got to pay for that, you know, and then like every single thing is like specifically designed to like cost as much as it possibly can but still sell, you know, like it's exhausting. So yeah, thumbs down to Gold Boys, that's what I say. And I don't really have any sympathy for him. I mean, listen, I don't wish him ill health. I hope his health is fine. But as far as being a nice person and strategizing, I don't know why everyone's like, oh, poor Ozzy. Like, Ozzy's been extremely manipulative and dishonest in the past. So, whatever. Here's a band that definitely is not dishonest. Anal Cunt is releasing a 6 LP box. Well, the band isn't because Steph Putnam, the singer, has been dead for years now. But a FOAD Records is re-releasing a massive 6 LP box set. It's got a ton of the band's EPs. I don't think it has any of their albums, but it's got a ton of their EPs, a ton of their splits. And all in all, it probably has over 1,000 songs in there because, you know, AXCX songs are often like 5-10 seconds long. AXCX, I love the concept. The lyrics are so hilarious, and I love how they're so offensive and they're so of the time, late 80s or early 90s, just nasty, self-destructive, drug addicts, funny, very offensive and just messed up. But I always like the idea of AXCX better than the actual thing, because the actual band is just like there's like no music whatsoever there. Like, and I get that's the artistic idea, is that there really is no music at all. It is literally just noise. But I can get that in 3 minutes. I don't know, or even 1 minute. I don't know if I mean, I wouldn't listen to 6 LPs of AXCX. I wonder if I often do wonder, like, is there anybody that actually sits down and says, oh, I can't wait to listen to this AXCX album, aside from like Picnic of Love, which is a folk album, humorously. Does anyone actually ever listen to a full album of this band? Would anyone actually listen to 6 LPs of this, or would people just want to have it? Sam, do you know anything about AXCX, and have you ever listened to them, and would you listen to 6 LPs of them?
I don't listen to them. I will not listen to them. if let's say, yeah, I think if like this was your favorite band, you would probably need to this, and you would probably need to listen to this, especially if you don't have it already on a physical format of some sort, right? Because I'm not sure if any of this stuff still exists in press. you know, a CD or, you know, a cassette or whatever.
No, this has all been out of press for years and years and years and years.
Yeah. So, like, if like, this band is your favorite band, then I totally see why you would need it and why you would play it, right? I would have to say, if it was me personally, I would probably not need all of this material, because it is a lot. What I did read about AXCX was, like, a lot of their early stuff was a lot of just, like, making up stuff. like, you know. So it's plausible that these are, like, recordings, especially the live recordings. Like, you know, a specific version of a song that might have not been, you know, I guess, recorded before, you know? So I get someone needing to have it to, like, you know, collect and whatever, because, you know, we are record collectors and we are insane sometimes when it comes to, like, the warmer reasons why we need a specific album or variant of some sort, or repress. Yeah, repress. But yeah, no, I don't think if the Bouncing Souls came up with a 6 LP of all of the miscellaneous things that they had lying around, I think I would buy it just for the sake that I need to be a vinyl completist, but I probably wouldn't play it all the time. Does that make sense? Yeah, I guess.
I mean, there's a lot of records. I'm definitely not getting burnt out on record collecting, but I'm getting burnt out on reissues. If you recall, Sam, when the Joe Strummer Estate reissued all the albums again, and they're like, and there's a bonus disc of acoustic demos, I'm like, you know what? I'm drawing the line. I just can't do it. I can't spend $250 on stuff that I already have for a bad disc of demos that I don't even really want. So yes, I'm waiting to pull the trigger on the two Alice Cooper reissues, even though I already have the CDs and the originals. But I do want the new ones because they've got the live album on vinyl. So yes, I understand that feeling 100%. But I do feel as though a lot of the companies have kind of, like, gotten hip to that, and they've sort of more and more started to take advantage of that, which I don't love, you know.
It's a cash cow, right? I was like, you know, as soon as you hit, like, an anniversary, oh, we found these demos, so let's, like, throw it on with the album. So it's, like, kind of like, now, how many basement records do I have? How many basement records do I need? You know, because, you know, some completists, because there's two extra tracks on it that wasn't, like, available before, it's like, now I need this, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, vinyl collecting.
At any rate, I hope the fans that want to get it, I would get it if the band was even half listenable. I'd love it, but it's just too much pure noise. But listen, it's cool. So let's play some AXCX, and then we'll also play after that With Honor. How about that, Sam?
Yeah, that sounds great.
I'm crowded by my ghost. Things I keep deep inside.
email back, just a few more stories. Sam, here's something I thought I was going to hate that I didn't hate at all. Jacob Noel, the son of Brad Noel of Sublime, has released a track co-written with Tim Armstrong of Rancid. It's called Time Traveler, and it's got very much a Long Beach Dub All Stars sound to it, in that it's got the lagging reggae thing with a little bit of psych, but it doesn't have the punk or danger of Sublime. It's just kind of the hippy-dippy side of Sublime without the kind of punchier side. I thought I was going to hate it. Sam, I like this. I actually kind of like this a lot, and I'm not sure I like it a lot because Jacob sounds exactly like his dad, and so it's as close as we're ever going to get to New Sublime, or if I just liked it on its own. But I definitely did not hate this track. What do you think of this track, Sam?
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I'm not like a huge Sublime fan. But like, you know, this really did have that like California beachy vibe, but like not like Sublime. Like there's hints of Sublime in it. Yes, I hear that. But it's not just Sublime, you know? It's not a remake of it, which I did kind of appreciate. That he kind of like went in his own direction. But I definitely can see this being played like at a surf shack on the beach or a restaurant. yeah, it's crazy, right? Like this kid was literally a baby. I think his dad died when he was like one or two or something like that.
Yeah, real young.
Like really, really young. And like, you know, I guess he just like grew up being like, that's my dad. And, you know, this is what I want to do now or whatever. And, you know, he linked up with Tim Armstrong and like made this. I do also hear the Tim Armstrong like, you know, spin on us, which is kind of nice. I'm not a fan, but I don't hate it. That's my assessment of it.
What was the Tim Armstrong? I didn't really catch the Tim Armstrong influence. What do you feel was the Tim Armstrong influence?
Well, the fact that it wasn't like all like 100% like reggae Sublime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I felt like it was a little bit more electro, yeah, and like more, I guess, rocky. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm totally off.
Well, speaking of Tim Armstrong has released another Hellcat singles track. It's called Aphids. The band is called Aphids, and the track is called Ring Ring, and it's produced by Tim Armstrong. Sam, I'll let you kick this one off, and then I'll respond.
So I kind of like the fact that there's the singles club happening, and because like a lot of the tracks that's coming out on this Hellcat singles club does sound very Rancid-y, and this track is very much up, it like it fits together very, very well with the rest of the stuff that I heard. Probably won't listen to this all the time, but I did dig this song.
See, I thought this song was kind of like just boring and uninteresting and generic Hellcat Records punk, you know? And I mean, it's fine. I would say it's bad, but it's fine and not remarkable, I would say. But the question that I have, and we've discussed this before, is that Tim Armstrong is just putting out so much music. He put out a song with Jesse Michaels, or maybe it was two songs. He put out a song with Cecile, the Jamaican reggae artist.
Mm-hmm.
He put out a song with Jacob Noel. He's putting out the song with Aphids. And it's all cool, but the fear that I have is that he's doing this and he's doing that, that none of it is going to gain any real traction and he's not really focusing on any of it. I would love to have a Jesse Michaels, Tim Armstrong band. I would really love to have a Cecile Tim Armstrong band. But it feels like, oh, here's a track. And I guess he's having fun, which is good. And it does show that he's a true artist in that, like, I would say that Rancid itself is probably the band guiltiest of, you know, giving the fans what they want. Whereas other stuff, I think you could definitely feel is Tim Armstrong really being an artist and trying this and trying that and maybe trying to be somewhat of a Phil Spector type character, maybe. But that, you know, there's worse things in the world on the music side, maybe not on the personal side. I wonder if he's just kind of like, I wonder if he's overworking hard and now he just wants to have fun. But the issue there is that results in a bunch of flighty stuff that like never really has any real traction, and you kind of comes and goes and doesn't really make a mark, and that we don't tap the potential. The Tim Armstrong, Jesse Michaels band has a ton of potential, obviously, but will they sit down and actually make something really awesome, or will Tim just bang something out in a weekend or a week, which won't necessarily have the won't necessarily hit as hard as it could have? That's my concern, Sam.
Well, it seems like he is having fun with this, like, because, you know, he wrote with Jacob Noel, this one he produced, so it's like, you know, he's kind of dabbling in things. But isn't this kind of like the same, I guess, conversation you would maybe have about Fat Mike? You know, like,
hasn't Fat Mike just put out like a whole bunch of mediocre stuff that isn't going to stick?
Well, that is a topic of conversation for another day. But yeah, like, you know, Fat Mike does a lot. You know, he runs a record label, and, you know,
true.
I'm not a fan of NoFX. My husband loves NoFX, but I get why people would love NoFX, because, you know, NoFX is that era of punk, you know, also Fat Wreck. So, like, if you love most of Fat Wreck stuff, then, you know, sometimes it's just packaged in, right? So it's kind of like, you know, I guess if this is what makes him happy, I guess this is where it should go. Because sometimes when you have a person that is really, really good with one specific sound, they don't want to do that sound all the time. And then sometimes it might manifest in a album that comes out that's like god awful, because we're looking for it, you know, the listeners are looking for like a remake of like Outcomes of Wolves or something like that, right? So maybe this is like his way of like channeling his energy into other sounds and working on other sounds, so that, you know, because the latest Rancid album is pretty good, you know, like, and I've seen feedback that like a lot of people from like that loves like older Rancid loves this album. So, you know, this might be good. It might be a good thing, John.
Maybe it is the way to stimulate your creativity after 30 years. I mean, we'll see. But like, when Tim Armstrong had the transplants, or even the Tim Armstrong solo album, it felt like he was putting all his energy into that and making something cool and unique and complete. I feel like we're just getting a bunch of wisps. But maybe, like Sam says, maybe that's just the way that he's keeping himself interested, and maybe we'll get that full on Jesse Michaels, Tim Armstrong album, or the full Cecile album. We'll just have to wait and see. I have my concerns, but listen, we all do. Let's wrap up one last story. Jeff Rose, and we're going to, I guess, be more theoretical on this than actually talking about the track, is Jeff Rosenstock has got a new LP coming out. The LP is called Hell Mode. It's out September 1 via Polyvinyl. And so what Sam and I were discussing before the show, and we said, let's talk about this on the show itself, is what does Jeff Rosenstock represent now? When Sam and I first started writing for Punk News, it was like bomb the music industry was huge. They were kind of the archetypal org core band, even though they didn't sound org core at all. That is, bomb the music industry definitely represented the mentality of the Punk News reader, you know. And then Jeff went solo and kind of became more indie rock, I guess you would say. And now, and then he's doing Craig of the Creek now, and he's doing some other stuff. And so the question is, what does Jeff Rosenstock, the band, represent, and who are their fan base? And I think Sam and I might disagree in that Like, if you go to a Jeff Rosenstock show now, it's mostly not Bob the Music Industry fans. It's people that are younger that got into music after Bob the Music Industry was already broken up. It's really more like college kids and just after college kids that I see. And Bob the Music Industry to them is, it would be like something like the 101ers would be to most Clash fans. That is something from before them that they're not that interested in, which is astounding and interesting to me. What's your take, Sam?
So Jeff Rosenstock to me, yes, he does have his listeners now are much younger. I have seen him in passing because I will not see him normally. But if he's like packaged with like, you know, someone like Pup or whatever, then I'll be there for that. But yeah, they are much younger. I think that they have found a lot of that college age or like, you know, bit of kids or people. Yeah, I guess they're not kids anymore, but like out there to see him. But I still feel like he still holds strong onto like this fest crowd, right? Like Bomb the Music Industry was a very, very festy band, in my opinion. Like, you know, when I went to fest, I saw a whole bunch of Bomb the Music Industry, like stickers on things and stuff like that. But I still feel that Jeff Rosenstock still is a part of that world. Still apart, like if he went down to fest, like they would flip out for them. But then yet again, like a lot of fest goers now, they are the younger crowd, like they are young, because you won't see me there anymore because I'm, you know, have back pains and my knees hurt and I don't want to stand for, you know, 12 hours. But I do love me some Hot Water Music. But yeah, no, I also do see him still like, you know, able to be packaged on like tours with like festy bands like Hot Water Music, like, you know, even Pup or, you know, like things like that. Yeah, I think he has a farther reach as Jeff Rosenstock than Bomb the Music Industry right now.
There's our deep analysis on Rosenstock. I remember the brief period between Bomb the Music Industry and Jeff Rosenstock solo. What's interesting is Jeff Rosenstock solo, as opposed to, I guess, the Jeff Rosenstock band, it's like he was playing so much smaller gigs than Bomb the Music Industry, and it appeared as though he was going to peter out. And then he came back, and actually he put out an EP or an album, actually, that like no one even knew about. I think he only sold it as a CDR initially, which I got a copy on iSpecial. And then he put out his first proper album, and then he just totally exploded. I think that was on Side One Dummy that he put that. I'm going to take a look real quick, and then we'll wrap this on up. But let's see here. I guess just the evolution of Rosenstock has been interesting in that, like, in very much a grassroots way, he just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now he's really big. Oh, okay, yeah, so I Look Like Shit was his first solo record in 2012 that he put out as a CDR initially. And then he put out his first proper album, which was We Cool on Side One Dummy, and that's really when he exploded. And he's been pretty much that big ever since. So yeah. So there you have it. That's where Jeff Rosenstock's at. Sam, anything you want to leave the listeners with? Anything you want them to think about or ponder?
No, I guess. Ponder how much you're spending on tickets to things. I mean, fees to tickets to things, because it's really pissing me off lately.
Yeah, I agree. So let's wrap this up. Sam, what song should we send them on out with?
I don't know. Do you want to play this new Rosenstock song?
Sure. So this is Jeff Rosenstock, and we will see you next week.
it's hard to, even if it hurts you, even if your brain
Don't take 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hey! Schnauf, schnauf, let it all out. Let your galumbato and your sandwich hang out. Come on, I'm talking to you, come on.